You're listening to Face Off, episode 75, recorded June 28th, 2010. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn. You probably noticed I'm coming in via Skype this time again. We'll talk about that in a second.
Via Skype and sounding kind of scrappy. Anyways, in this podcast, we talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. Wow. As always, you can view our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com. All right, so yeah, I guess, Mark, you're coming in via Skype this week, and you're kind of sounding scrappy again like we talked about a couple episodes ago.
Yeah, so if I remember right, a couple episodes ago, we promised that this wouldn't happen again, but my situation is still broken, but I did order a piece to fix this issue. So when we do remote Skypings, when we record Face Off, it should be better in the future. So this should be the last one. So just bear with us on the audio quality of my voice this time.
Right. So to record the show, we use an Alesis multimix mixer. You know, it's got like 8 channels, does a lot of stuff. But, you know, a lot of people don't need that. I mean, like, if you're recording Skype with me over in your house, like, what do you need that full mixer for? You don't. So our geek tool of the week is actually the Blue Microphone Icicle Converter. And what that does is it allows you to hook up an XLR microphone, including condenser microphones that require phantom power, and lets you hook them up to your computer via USB.
Yeah, so I think we talked about the Snowball, and if we didn't, it's basically a podcasting quality microphone that is USB. So you don't need really a fancy mixer, and you know, you don't need to buy a bunch of fancy equipment. What this does is cool. It's like if you already have the fancy mic and stuff, but you don't have the mixer, you can just get the this basic converter tool to convert the XLR to USB. XLR is kind of the fat, like, standard decent
three-prong hookup for, like, you know, normal for higher quality microphones, usually studio or
and so this thing kind of bridges the gap and just allows you to hook it up to any computer,
right? Because you can buy, you know, really nice condenser USB microphones like the Snowball or the blue Snowball is a really popular one, but this way you can buy whatever microphone you want that has whatever, you know, tone or sound or sort of sound, what do you call it, pattern, like cardioid or whatever you want, and hook it up USB to your computer. So check it out. The link is in the show notes. It's the Blue Microphone Icicle Converter.
And this will be the device that I'm going to be using to fix this issue in the future.
Yeah, I guess we haven't tried it yet, but we were looking for the cheapest mixer that had USB for you in your house, and we're like, these are kind of expensive. And we're like, well, there has to be just an easy way to kind of convert these or something. And then the second you found this, you actually found the device and you said it was Blue, which I've used Blue stuff. It's really good, really good stuff. I have no problem recommending it. I'm sure it'll be awesome.
Yeah, and it has good reviews, and similar devices were going for twice the price. So I'm interested to see, like, how well it's going to work. And I will definitely let you know, but I think it's, for what it is and the reviews, I think we're safe to recommend it. I think it'll be good. So
yep. So check it out. Let's get into our web apps this week. Our first web app. So when you decide you're working on a project, you've got a website or something that you're working on either for someone or for yourself, and you're thinking, hey, you know, I got to start launching this thing. With the people that made this web app found out is it's hard. There's really no good sort of standardized list of things you need to do, like a checklist before you launch something. So they created launchlist.net. And what it is, it's just a simple web app where you can sign up if you want to, you know, sign up to kind of keep it persistent, or you can just do it in one shot. But it just gives you a checklist of things you probably ought to do before you launch a website.
When you first put this in the show notes and I checked it out, I was like, wow, this interface is really cool. It's like, it's very vertical. You start at the top and kind of talk about your project, and then you literally get to flip these little switches and move them to the side. And then it's like, yes, you know, that's checked off. And as you go down, you know, and then you can kind of launch your rocket thing. What I like about this too, is it looks like it has a, the ability to add your own. So like this can kind of change as technology changes and things right. change. You can put comments on here. So I noticed there was a list, something to check, which would be to make sure your site works in IE6. Maybe your goal is to ignore IE6, and you could like kind of click that and say, oh, you know, comment on it and say, you know, I don't want to do that. But this is, I like the interface and I like how simple it is. It's really cool.
Yeah.
And I think it's very functional too. I mean,
yeah, it's got some just little things you think about, like, you know, web statistics package. Do you have that installed? Do you have web stats? You know, have your required fields been tested? Your forms passed? Did you test it at 1024x768? Did you test it at higher resolutions?
Did you make a custom 404 page, or is it just the default?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the very first one is very important is if you checked your spelling.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, we talked about an app to do that too.
Yeah. Speller. Which episode? Speller.us. Really cool app. But anyways, yep. That's, you know, a really simple kind of web app. They're talking about coming out with a pro version where if you want, you know, a more definitive list or some other things, I'm not sure what they'll do, but they will have a pro version. But for right now, they claim that this will be free and you can use it without paying for all of time is what they sort of claim.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, check it out. It's at launchlist.net. All right, so the next app, I was almost hesitant to kind of do this because it is Windows. It's very Windows-based. It's designed for Windows computers, but, you know, I thought, you know, it's designed for Windows computers in the way that the rest of us don't like is we hate supporting Windows computers. They're a pain to support. Yeah. So what this app actually does is it allows you to go in and check a bunch of apps that you like for Windows that you need installed, and it creates an app that will install all of those for you. So, you know, when you and I talk, you need to especially Windows computers, you need to reformat them, you know, usually fairly often because they just get chunky and slow, and the best way to take care of that is just to reformat it. Well, one of the big pains is having to reinstall everything. Once you do, you got to go download the file, install it, find the next one, install it. And what this has is just a big list of commonly used software that you would use in Windows. There's some cool apps that I hadn't even seen before, but you go through and you check all of them that you want, and then you click Get Installer. Gives you an installer that will install all those applications for you.
Awesome. So, like, you go on the site and you just click things like, I want Chrome, I want Skype, and this will all be installed in one installer, yeah. Right?
Yep.
So when you first linked this, the name sounded familiar. I don't know if it was this exact person or company or if it was a similar name that made like unattended installers for like XP where yep. you have things removed usually and like the CD key is already built in, so you just put the CD in and it installs Windows. But this would be good for either post-installation or to be bundled up with that.
Right, or like if you are doing, you know, supporting IT for a company, you say, here is sort of the standard bundle, you know, here's the installer for our standard bundle of apps. Or if you aren't quite as tech-savvy enough to do imaging or anything fancy like that, then you can just, you know, install Windows on all your computers and then use the same installer package to take care of all the programs you want installed on each one.
Yeah, if you find yourself doing a lot of like you know, requests like support type stuff for your family or whatever, you could kind of make your own bundle, put it on a USB disk, and then just kind of go around and one installer. You don't have to like install 10 different things. That's like a big hassle, you know, like installing all the different spyware removal tools and all that stuff. Security, they've got a vast AVG SpyBot. So you can kind of pick the one you want and install that stuff all in one shot. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. This could be a way I could get my mother to finally install some software that will protect her computer. It is just so, flooded.
Like you said, normally we don't do like desktop type apps, but I mean, as a web app, this does a pretty good job of allowing you to like click the things you want and actually make a installer. So it is. I mean, it is a web app that you're going to end up eventually installing on your computer, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I don't like doing, you know, OS-specific things, but I figured, you know, even if you don't use Windows as your primary OS, anybody who has any sort of, you know, computer techno savvy is probably supporting one or two Windows computers in their household or in their family. So this can help you save some time.
Exactly.
I want to remind you guys, if you have, actually not remind you, I'm telling you that if you have a web app or some news and follow-ups or a geek tool that we should look at, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Let us know. We want to talk about it. Really excited to talk about the stuff that you guys want to talk about. So please go there and make any suggestion, even, you know, something you might be a long shot. Mark and I, you know, even if we don't know it already, we might go, hey, that's pretty cool. I want to learn that. And we'll go hit the books and then make an episode about it. So go there and help us out. Let's get into our topic this week, which is we're just kind of talking about in general support request systems.
All right. So support request systems, what are they? They're, you know, you probably ran into this if you've, you know, dealt with any, you know, decently sized business where you send in a support request. Maybe it's a support at Dell.com or whatnot, and you get this ticket like immediately, or an email immediately back saying, you know, oh, we've got your inquiry and we're going to respond to it soon. That's kind of a support request ticket system.
Right.
That's what we're going to be talking about today.
Helping, you know, a customer trying to reach the company for help, you know, some form of support.
So, why do that? The first reason that comes up is you have a history of support questions for each user. In the app that I created, I started just doing email alone. You know, it made sense. It just start simple, you know.
Yeah.
It quickly when you start getting 4, 5, 6 emails a day all of a sudden for like support requests, it's hard to tell who asked what, what versions of software they have. You know, what their original question was, if you've been like going back and forth with right. them.
And Gmail, so, you know, if you're using something like Google Apps, like it helps because Gmail's pretty good at, good at doing sort of threaded email conversations, but it's not perfect.
Right. Especially if let's say they reply a lot, but then they also like add another support request like a couple weeks later. You kind of forget like the whole history that came along with
totally.
That.
Totally. Absolutely.
Some companies have CRM software that keep track of like all customer interaction, but support requests are typically focused on just the support type emails. So one of another reason why they're pretty good is you can kind of do so. Since everything's tracked and everything's logged for a user, you can also go back, let's say once a month, and audit and find and kind of look at all the support questions that came in. And you could say, you know, how can we, you know, we're getting a lot of the same question or something. And you could say like, maybe we should, you know, alter our documentation so it's more clear. Maybe we should change the app so it's more clear, or, you know, find some way to eliminate the problem so you don't have it anymore.
Right. Yeah.
If you don't use a support request type system, you have emails you can go through, which I did for a while, but a lot of support request ticket systems have like built-in functions for this called like knowledge bases and make it really easy to do that.
Well, it fills in the gaps. I mean, email is an email, and this is like, well, I want to see everything related to not only, you know, everything that this one person has submitted already, but also other things that other people have submitted that are related to that. And email just doesn't do this well. You know, it's focused on just a conversation.
Another advantage is you have the ability to, you know, specify departments in a lot of these. You can say, you know, this is more of a development type question that I'm not sure of. I'm going to have to pass this on. Or maybe this needs to go to billing versus just general support. Another thing is, along with the knowledge bases, you have like, you can specify pre-made responses. And the support request ticket system that I'm going to talk about allows you to combine them. So if somebody asks 4 different questions and you've got 3 of them in your database that are common questions that people ask, you can kind of select the 3. It drops it in the thing, puts the greeting, you know, hi, Mark. It puts the 3 questions. You can maybe the 4th question or the 3rd question that they had wasn't in the database and it was a new question, then you can type that part out and then send it to them and then later on save that question.
Yeah,
it makes it a lot faster to get responses out there.
Yeah, I think sort of for me, I think the biggest advantage is that it's a conduit to your company, whereas email is a very rough conduit to that. So, you know, just straight email without a system behind it. What's great about all these systems is they usually use email, like, you know, they grab from an email inbox. So you still have, the customer still usually has the ability to use a familiar form of communication. But it does things like the fact I don't have to have five different people logged into email address to an email account like on Google Apps, right? Because if you want five departments or five support people, you have to do that. Or, you know, you also have the ability that, like with a support system I've worked in the past, people could email tickets to submit, you know, support tickets, but it the system wouldn't allow me to communicate with them through the system. So then I would have to copy their email address, go to my email, respond to them. And then they had my personal email, which was so at times very frustrating because then it's like, well, no, I'm not the only support guy. We have a team. You need to send it to this email address because it's distributed to everybody. You know, and so like these systems, that's what's great about it is you have, you know, also distributed a way to distribute it amongst various other people. But you also have the ability to, you know, if you want to, you can say like, depending upon the system, you know, you can watch for a ticket by that person again and then, you know, be the first to grab it.
That's a very good point. So far, I've only used a support system for just soloing, you know, and just myself. But it really comes into play when you have multiple people and you want to delegate support tickets to other people, or, you know, and you don't want to share your email credentials to the whole office.
Right. Well, a very similar app that we found that is a lot like this that is really good is CoTweet. We've talked about CoTweet before. And the benefit of CoTweet is it allows multiple people to interact through one Twitter account. So you have your company's Twitter account. Multiple people can log into CoTweet. You don't have to tell them the username and password to the Twitter system. And they same thing. Like it's, you know, you can with CoTweet, I can be on duty. You can be off. I get email notifications when someone tweets out, you know, Face Off Show. Or, you know, what we do is most time both of us are on duty. But we don't ever have to log in as Face Off or anything. It's a great way for us to interact with our listeners without having to both log into the same account. Unless if we ever, you know, got like an intern or something like that, we just have to give them a CoTweet account and give them access to that. We don't have to give them that username and password to the actual account for our company.
Yep. So as developers, issue trackers and request trackers, you know, like support request trackers, kind of seem to be the same thing at first glance.
Right.
They both keep track of things that kind of need to get answered or done. So it's kind of often debated whether or not we should integrate support requests into the issue tracker or kind of keep them separate. And I had kind of a few notes on this. It was at least my thought that the support technician should try to be the middleman and help, you know, at least go through all the tickets and submit the ones that are actually, in fact, bugs and answer the support right. questions instead of like merging the two.
Right. So what I heard is, I think I heard you say this before, is that so in medical terms, there's something called triage, which basically that person's job is like when people come into the ER or whatever, or, you know, you've seen it like in war movies, whoever's in charge of triage like says, okay, you know, work on this person next or not. And so what you're saying is you kind of need someone to be like triage for that. Like what we found, and I agree with you, I like this workflow a lot, is because if you combine the two, if they're directly related, then your work that has been absolutely decided upon gets polluted with things that are just often discussion. So if someone says, hey, I think this is a bug, but it's really your feature. Well, then, you know, you're looking, let's say like I'm just a developer. I'm not doing support right now. I'm looking through my issue tracker to see what the next issues I should be working on for the product are. And it's polluted with this other stuff, which I don't really like. I like that workflow of, you know, keeping them separate and then having one person say, oh, this really is a bug that we need to fix. Let's put this in our project issue tracker, not our support tracker.
Yeah, even though they're very similar things, I've found that many issue trackers are bad support request trackers. They don't have, a lot of times they don't have the ability to automatically send emails saying, you know, we got your response and on and on. And vice versa, the support request systems are definitely not issue trackers. One of the things that, you know, kind of comes up is customers, you know, if you do have them merged together, customers might submit a bug, but it doesn't have, you know, detailed information on how to fix it or how the bug even happened. Mm-hmm. And you should never have to like respond back to your customers and say, you know, would you please submit a better bug report? You know, like you know, that should be kind of separate, in my opinion. They should, the support request should say, oh, you know, I don't know, it should be treated differently and they should be responded to differently. And so right. I think it makes a little bit more sense to keep them separate. But I know it is a debated issue. So
there's different levels of quality control expectations. I expect my, you know, the programmers I'm working with, the smart, efficient programmers I work with, to submit detailed bug reports with you know, exact solutions to help you fix it. You can't really have that expectation of your customers. A really good customer will do that for you, and that's really cool when they do, and that's nice. But you also, you know, your general customer A, you can't be like, I can't submit your bug report. You're not giving me enough information. That's not a way to treat a customer, you know? And
yeah.
The other thing is, too, you can't also expect your customers, one of the big things is you'll get duplicates a lot. You can't expect your customers to dig through your issues and find a bug. And if it exists, say, the Me Too, you know, odds are they're going to you put a bunch of duplicates in there. And that's where that sort of triage helps, because if you have customers submitting the same bug, you know, you only need one instance of that bug in your project tracker. You don't need to pollute it with a bunch of duplicate bugs.
Exactly. The other thing too is if it's if it is merged together, it's an automatic, you know, when somebody emails, it automatically makes a bug or support ticket. Is customers sometimes can inadvertently give private information, whether it's credentials to something or mm-hmm. just their name and address, into a bug report, thinking that they're contacting, you know, private support, and it automatically gets thrown into a bug system. And now a bunch of developers see it, you know, that right. could potentially be a problem as well. So right. I think I've come to the conclusion, at least for myself, that it's good to keep these separate.
My name is Jade Robbins. My social security number is 55555. Please help me. And you're like, oh, dude, don't email your password out.
Another thing that we kind of found out because we were going to try to do some support requests with Redmine was that a lot of these issue trackers require a user to be created, which makes sense because it wants to tie everything together, which user's created what, and, you know, assign this to this user and email this user when it's done and all this stuff. But if it's really hard for a person to make a support request, they can oftentimes get frustrated and just, you know, start wanting to call your business or go out of the loop as far as the normal support request workflow goes.
Or just not submit it and just say, all right, I'm out. You know, I'm done with this.
Yeah. So, I mean, you really, you know, how do you get to people to fill them out? Well, the first thing is to not make them go through a lengthy sign up or login process in order to submit a request. They should be able to just email an email or go to support.yourbusiness.com yeah. and fill out a form. Or go to /feedback or, you know, whatever it is, make it really easy. Don't make them sign in just to send info. You know, if they are signed in, maybe you can automatically, like in the email, you can have it say which version they have of your software, what you can have it send some additional information, but don't force that they have to be signed in yeah. or logged in. Provide email alerts to feel like they're part of the process. Give them instant feedback. Most issue trackers do this. When somebody submits a request, it makes them feel good that they get an email right away yeah. saying, hey, we're going to look into this. They don't, you know, if it goes to an email, they don't hear anything back. They don't know if it made it there or right. if someone's going to, you know, when they see an email and it says, you know, we will respond within 24 hours, they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, well, and just an email means it wasn't, you know, just a dead inbox that some guy that used to work at the company 4 years ago was supposed to be watching.
Right, or a form that's broken or yeah. something. They don't know if it got through, you know.
Another thing, too, that is nice about usually issue trackers versus, like, support trackers is that support trackers, they're really, like you said, they're made for handling anonymous, you know, ticket submission. So the other nice thing is that, like when we were playing around with integrating Redmine, is it's not the best support tracker because, like, things like it, if you do get it to finally email people whenever you change the ticket, it emails everything. And oftentimes that's just too much detailed information. Most support tickets allow you to have, like, private comments or, you know, it specifically internal stuff that they don't get emailed about. But when you make a generic response, they do get an email. So it's nice. It handles that communication, but also lets you do internal communication and notes for, you know, future developers. Like, if you have a developer that has a similar bug and then they go looking through the knowledge base later, you know, there might be some internal notes there that are nice that they don't get emailed out to the customer because often they're too technical and the customer doesn't need to see that anyways.
Yeah, good point. Make sure every issue goes through the support ticket system. I've definitely had the scenario where I'm on the phone with somebody and they mention something, but I don't have the answer right away, or it's something that might take a little bit of time, and I'll tell them, I hear you and I'll get the answer to you, but please make a support request system so it's official, and I definitely don't forget, if it's in there, it will get responded to.
Plus, that helps me in the future when I'm looking through my knowledge base trying to solve this problem. I need it to be in that system. That system is only reliable if you use it for everything.
Definitely. So, don't let your customers have a special email. Don't say, "Oh, okay, just email me at Mark at whatever," or say, "Oh yeah, I'll get to you," and then on the phone, and then not respond. Make sure it goes through there, because if it does, either you or you can delegate it. Someone will answer it, and it, like you said, it will be in the knowledge base. So for future questions, it can be answered. And for analysis, maybe same
Totally.
reasons.
Totally.
When things go wrong, sometimes support request systems can have issues. One of them I found is, so I originally started my email account sending everything to support at my company. That was just what I did. So I had signed up to some services and different things, and I didn't dedicate that email address to a support tracker until later. And when I did that later, these other companies were still sending me tickets or information, and my support ticket would email them back and say, "Hey, I got an issue for you," and then it would respond back saying, "Hey, don't reply to us. We're a non-reply," and
Then
then
he'd
it would
make
say, "Oh, I
another
got another
ticket.
ticket for that," and it would just go into this endless loop. A lot of support request trackers do have like limits of how many replies you can do and things. You can set that. How many like tickets somebody can have open for these kind of things. And you can also ban certain email addresses, but it makes sense to just start with an email address that is dedicated for this. I mean, that's definitely the best
Totally.
case scenario. I have had people CC support trackers, and what happens there is like when they start emailing their colleagues and things, it makes a new request for every colleague, and it can get kind of hairy, but that's
I could see
usually,
that.
I mean, they usually know that they've done something wrong when they start getting emails like crazy from the support tracker. So that's my experience with them so far. How has yours been? I mean, as far
Well,
as
like I said, we use a pretty hacked up version of Redmine at work, and we basically hacked it to allow anonymous ticket submission. But that's where it kind of ended, and it makes it just such a bigger pain in the butt because we have this email address where all these support tickets are going to, and they get put into the system, and there's like little bugs that I could fix, but I would rather just move to a proper ticketing system for support. There's things like it doesn't tell me the email address, so if people don't put it in their signature, I don't know how to reply to, because I do have to make a separate reply to with my personal email account to do it. Very, 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 very frustrating. The other thing too is, like I said, there's little things like I can't put just personal notes in, or actually right now no one gets replied to or anything if I change the ticket. So it's like any progress I make, I have to go out of the loop to my email and email them and tell them again, which is very, very frustrating. But what I've seen from like so I guess we might as well, the one that you use that you really like, and I think I'm kind of becoming a fan of, is OS Ticket.
Yeah, so OS Ticket is LAMP, kind of compatible. It's PHP. It uses MySQL backend. I have it running on Nginx, but it's compatible with Apache. What I liked about OS Ticket is its simplicity. It took me one night to set up, and for a system like this, I consider that pretty easy. I think you could do it if you had, no problems, maybe an hour. If you had kind of a lot of problems setting up like the cron job and things, maybe two or three. But I
Most of
consider
these are
that to be
like a rock, though,
pretty
you know?
simple.
Yeah, once you get them set up, they usually don't shake much.
It works with Gmail and Google Apps, which I use for my emails, so that works great. Another one that I have seen, it's kind of the industry standard. It's got, a lot of Fortune 100 companies, is this open source one called the Request Tracker. And it's got like every feature, and it seems like everybody's using it. What I don't like about it is configured in the t well, and I, it's configured in the typical Linux way of configuration files, which I tend to like, but this one's pretty massive and kind of difficult to set up. Once you get it set up, I've been told it runs just great. This seems to be, there's like books on it. It seems to be like the big mama as far as the OS,
The big
open
mama.
source request tracker, and that's done by bestpractical.com. We'll have a link in the show notes. But OS Ticket, I have to say, I don't know, I would just recommend that for people that want to get started with a simple support tracker.
Well, I mean, we've got, so also in our show notes, we've got a link to a Wikipedia article that has a bunch of issue tracking systems. Again, these are issue tracking systems, so some of them aren't specifically support tracking systems. So look at the features, make sure it has what you want. It has this really great feature comparison at the bottom with different input and interfaces and stuff. So really do your homework and figure out what you like. I mean, it took us a while. I thought Redmine was sort of the end-all awesome of everything. And after a while, I kind of said, man, I'm tired of hacking this application to have it do what I want. And then Mark was showing me OS Ticket, and I was like, it has most of the features I want, but check them out. There's definitely a lot of them in there. And we hope this helps you guys, you know, get your support tracker system set up and make sure you think about it a little bit deeper, because it isn't quite, you know, just set up or use your issue tracker. Like, I was looking at the Wikipedia article, and they were talking about things like track and stuff, which, you know, check them out. Try them and, you know, make sure you get the one that you like. I think I'm a fan of OS Ticket. I really like Redmine as a project tracker, and I think I like OS Ticket as a support tracker. I think I like to keep them separate. So,
I definitely agree with the keeping them separate. So that's all I wanted to say.
Check out our show notes. We got some links there for you guys to look at. That Wikipedia link with all of them for once. So that wraps it up for this episode of Face Off. I want to thank you guys for listening. I also want to remind you, you can subscribe to the show by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe if you haven't subscribed yet. You can also leave feedback for the show by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. We Twitter, Facebook, email, phone, anything. Let us know. We love to hear from you guys. Thanks a lot for listening again, and we will see you guys next week.